It's possible that if things had been different, if things had gone as planned, that Ishmael, Abraham's half-Egyptian son of a slave, might have been our ancestor instead of Yitzchak. That seems, after all, to be what Sarah intended when she told Abraham to have a child with Hagar. "Go to my maidservant," she says, "and perhaps I will be built up through her." While Rashi suggests that Sarah was also hoping for a biological child of her own, and that she hoped that the merit of her self-sacrifice would cause God to allow her the pregnancy she'd been denied all those years, a more straightforward reading of her words seems to point to her hope for an adopted child, biologically Abraham's, but relationally hers as well. And while things don't work out that way, it is not obvious at this point in the narrative that this isn't a real possible pathway to the covenantal heir. All that God has promised up to now is that the heir will be Abraham's biological child. It is not until chapters later, long after relations between Sarah and Hagar, Ishmael's biological mother, have entirely collapsed, that God tells Abraham that Ishmael cannot inherit. Bereshit 17:19-21. God said, "Nevertheless, Sarah your wife will bear you a son, and you shall call him Yitzchak. I will establish my covenant with him, an eternal covenant for his children after him. Regarding Ishmael, I have heard you. Behold, I will bless him and make him fertile and exceedingly increase his numbers. He shall be the father of 12 chieftains, and I will make of him a great nation. But I will make my covenant with Yitzchak, who Sarah will bear at this season next year." It is possible, of course, that it was always God's inevitable plan for Sarah to give birth to a child of her own, and that the long wait towards that point was part of that destiny. But it is also possible to read the story in another way, not as a story of a misguided attempt always destined to result in an extra non-covenantal child, but as the tragic story of an heir who might have been. The story in which Ishmael was the covenantal heir and ancestor of the Jewish people would have been a different story with different symbolism. Instead of a story that traces Jewish origins to Sarah's miraculous conception at advanced age, a stage of life when this seemed impossible, this story would have been a tale about love when love seems impossible. A collaboration between two women who have every reason to resent each other, bound together by nothing but love for the same child. It would have been a story about an in-between child, both Israelite and Egyptian, both slave and free. Instead of a story about a child born to Abraham and Sarah, his niece, a child entirely from the line of Terach and ultimately from Shem, Noach's blessed son, it would be a story about a child who carried that blessed lineage on his father and adoptive mother's side, but also carries the blood of Ham, Noach's cursed son, on his birth mother's. And in this alternative version of the story, it would be exactly this child, this union of opposites brought together only because of the shared love of a child, that God would choose to carry the covenant. That would-be story never comes true for Abraham, Sarah, and Hagar. It never comes true because that sort of love is difficult. Hagar and Sarah cannot cooperate in raising this child. Ishmael remains firmly Hagar's son, ultimately expelled from Abraham's home, because Sarah cannot abide the thought that he might inherit along with Yitzchak. In the ultimate defeat of this might have been, not only do Hagar and Sarah not share a son, but their respective sons cannot even share a home. But Sarah and Hagar are not the last time we see this encounter of Egyptian and Israelite, free woman and slave. Instead, we meet their counterparts years later, this time in Egypt instead of Canaan. Shemot 2:5-9. The daughter of Pharaoh came down to bathe in the Nile while her maidens walked along the Nile. She spied the basket among the reeds and sent her slave girl to fetch it. When she opened it, she saw that it was a child, a boy crying. She took pity on it and said, "This must be a Hebrew child." His sister said to Pharaoh's daughter, "Shall I go and get you a Hebrew nurse to suckle this child for you?" Pharaoh's daughter answered, "Yes." So the girl went and called the child's mother. Pharaoh's daughter said to her, "Take this child and nurse it for me, and I will pay your wages." So the woman took the child and nursed it. When the child grew up, she brought him to Paro's daughter, who made him her son. She called him Moshe, explaining, "I drew him out of the water." The players in this drama are remarkably similar to Sarah and Hagar. A free woman who is a princess, a slave who is a mother, and a baby boy. This time the roles are reversed. It is the Egyptian woman who is in the dominant social position, and the Israelite woman who is the child's biological mother. But the main choice to be made in this story, the question of whether these women who have nothing in common will collaborate to raise a child, whether their shared love can overcome their differences, is exactly the same. And this time, the answer to that question is yes. Moshe's in-betweenness never leaves him. Even as a fugitive from Paro's court, even after he has gone out to see his brothers, understood himself to be an Israelite, and killed for that new identity, his upbringing stays with him. Shmot 2:16-19. Now the priest of Midian had 7 daughters. They came to draw water and filled the troughs to water their father's flock. They came to draw water and filled the troughs to water their father's flock, but shepherds came and drove them off. Moshe rose to their defense and he watered their flock. When they returned to their father Reuel, he said, "How is it that you have come back so soon today?" They answered, "An Egyptian rescued us from the shepherds. He even drew water for us and watered the flock." When Moshe encounters Yitro's daughters at the well, they go home and tell their father they met an Egyptian man. How did they know he was Egyptian? It's not clear. It might have been his clothes, maybe the color or the stitching. Maybe it was his sandals, or a mulct worn through from his journey across countries, that still showed something of their origin. But it is also possible that as he chased away the shepherds, yelling at them to leave the young women alone, Yitro's daughters heard, through his stutters, a thick Egyptian accent. Because, after all, even when he understands himself to be an Israelite, even after he has endangered his life for his people, Moshe is still Bat Paro's son as much as he is his mother's. Her language, her accent, will never leave him. And maybe, although the text does not tell us, that was the same accent Moshe spoke with sometime later at Sinai, when he relayed the word of God to the Jewish people. Maybe that was what God was waiting for all this time. The Ishmael who might have been, son of a free woman and a slave, son of one mother from Shem's family and one from Cham's, who would give the Torah to the Jewish people in Egyptian accented Hebrew, ensuring that we would know forever that the Torah never belonged, even in its first moments, to only one type of person. The Ishmael who might have been the child of two mothers is lost to us. But in choosing to work together to save the child they both see as their son, Bat Paro and Yocheved bring that dream back to the Jewish story. Together they raise a child who is neither entirely one thing or another, who, perhaps because he has always been a man in between, is uniquely positioned to redeem a people, to help them traverse the no man's land between Egypt and Canaan, and ultimately cross the boundaries between heaven and earth.